Everybody, welcome back to this week's edition of Breaking Down the Bytes. I'm your host, Pat. You can find me on Twitter at Layer8Packet. Kyle's over there, as always, sidekicking it. You can find him on Twitter at Danith256. You can find the show on Twitter at Breaking Bytes Pod. Or if you just want to look in our show notes of the episode, all of our links are in there. We're pretty active on Twitter, so come say hello to Kyle and I. And back for another arousing episode of the podcast here this week. Kyle, what's up, man? How you doing?
Just living the dream. Another day in paradise. We got another Thursday here. Going to drop on a Tuesday, right? Boom.
That's it. That's it. That's how we roll. That and downhills. Let's rock and roll. Yeah. It's been a rough couple of weeks and, you know, just doing our thing. And in the vast world of networks and all kinds of crazy issues and internet outages and crazy, crazy stuff. So this week, Kyle, it's a little outside, at least outside of my wheelhouse. So we're going to talk to someone that's much smarter than we are in his avenue, in his field of IT. And John, let me know if I get this right. It's director of IT at International Institute for Restorative Practices, or IIRP, graduate school, Mr. John Glasgow.
Yes.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I got that right. Is that right? Is that your official title?
You got it. It's a mouthful.
That's it. Starting off on the right foot.
Yes.
That's how we like to do things here.
Yep.
That's awesome. So, John, thanks for joining. John, your sort of forte, if you will, is in the software development arena. Is that correct?
I've been in the kind of programming software development space for about 20 years professionally.
Man.
So,
yeah. And I don't know how you do it that long, man. I don't have the programmer brain. Like, I don't know what the, like, if you have to have a like certain mindset to like play in that avenue. I just don't. I wish I did, because I know, you know, it's a software world going forward, right? Where everyone else is just living in it at this point. It just never appealed to me in that particular avenue. So, John, starting off, like, where and how did you get your start and sort of like get exposed to the software field and go, yeah, this is what I want to do?
Yeah. So back when I was about 10, got a Zenith X86, big block computer, right? And I didn't know anything about it. So I ended up like pouring through DOS 3 manuals and really getting into it. Then I had people along the way that kind of helped me, you know, get into like some like batch scripting, and then from there into like Java, VB4, stuff like that. Like back when I was in high school, I kicked around like, do I do this? Do I, you know, go to law school and go that route? You know, I didn't really know which way to go. Like I was even thinking of joining the Marines. And what I ended up doing was saying, you know what? I just really like computers. I'm really interested in technology. I'm going to go for that. So, went to school at, got my, bachelor's in computer science, and, you know, had a couple internships, stuff like that. And then from there, like it, of course, around that time for me, it was the dot-com bubble that burst, right? So, you know, you had all these people that were working at like pets.com and stuff like that, that were like out looking for jobs with masters and PhDs. And, you know, being somebody that's interested in coding, that was kind of a hard one to beat. What I ended up doing was started working at a little insurance company. And I was actually like helping sell insurance and things like that. But they had all these needs, right? Keeping track of all the different policies that they had, as well as like things like payroll. Like they didn't have a payroll system, so it was all paper. So I wrote those systems. Then next thing you know, a job that I had applied for like 6 months prior to getting that insurance job, finally the position opened, and I went to work there as an IT analyst.
Nice. No, yeah, that sounds pretty pretty decent. So when did you get into the software development side of it? Did you get exposed to like a lot of things like network or, you know, sysadmin or cybersecurity? You got all that and then like sort of landed on software engineer.
So I initially wanted to become a network admin. That's
what we like to hear. I like it.
Yeah. Like I really like that space. And I ended up doing that for a couple years, kind of working for a telemarketing division of a timeshare company. So like they had dialer equipment that would like spit out like hundreds of thousands of calls a day.
Sure.
And, so like I was keeping all that equipment running. But then they had these other needs that were more software focused. And that's when I started to really get into the coding more of a full time thing. So from there, I became a programmer at a local 4-year college. And then I just kind of kept working and doing different projects and stuff. Eventually started my own software company and built something from the ground up. For that was pretty exciting.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Quick story on the telemarketer side. I worked at a place and one of our customers was a telemarketing firm. And at the time I was in the field, you know, and whatnot, and they had some issues. So I had to run up there and whatnot. And John, you're exactly right. Like it was a room full of employees. And they would sit in front of this. It looked like it was like a DOS terminal, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
That's sort of what it looked like. And their software would automatically dial the numbers. And they had a script they read from. And it was the same thing over and over. And it's like you only had like 30 seconds in between calls. It was like the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm back behind the curtain of all those spam telemarketer calls right now. I'm like, this is how it works. This is crazy, you know? So, I was there for like a half a day just troubleshooting some issues and whatnot. And I saw how these folks worked and I was like, whoa, this is like weird. Like it was just, it was so out of place. I don't want to say out of place, but it was like, I was never exposed to that before. I didn't know how all that kind of stuff worked, but yeah, they sat in front of these terminals and it just dialed random numbers. And there was like maybe 60 people in a room and they all were working off the same script. And it was like, whoa, that's some crazy stuff right there. So just a little inside information. I was wow, it was interesting on how you peel back the curtain to some of that spam, some of the spam calls. You're like, wow, this is kind of crazy.
It really is. I mean, we had probably 150 people working there full time.
Okay.
So it was nothing to have 250,000 calls go out a day and everything had to be working. And this is like early days of VoIP and stuff like that too. So it was pretty intense.
Yeah. This place was on like Cisco IADS and all kinds of crazy stuff. Like I was like, whoa, the analog and auto dialers. Yeah. And I was like, whoa.
Yes.
What in the world? No, that was just a quick story. I thought that was cool. You mentioned the telemarketer thing. I was like, oh, I have a story about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
John, you kind of started. So you started at the college there for the software engineering side. Did you start out in a particular language or did you learn it all? Like, did you have a favorite language? Was it Java, C++ at that point? Or?
Oh, yeah. Some people will probably not like this, but I really liked VB4, which became VB6, and then .NET came around, and that's when I started getting into VB, .NET, C#, started plugging away on those. Made a lot of cool stuff in the .NET stack, Microsoft stack in general. And then probably the last 6 or 7 years, I've been doing almost exclusively Python stuff. So
that was my next question. Python seems to be super popular right now.
It's so good. It is so good. easy to pick up. It's got everything baked into it. There's like 50 different ways to solve a problem. It's great.
Yeah. Now that's interesting because I started to study for the I'm in the network space, obviously, and where I'm at now is a heavy Cisco shop. So I've started to kind of peel back the onion on the Cisco DevNet stuff. So a lot of Python, like Ansible automation, that sort of thing. And, you know, I can barely read a Python script. Like if I had one in front of me, I could read it as far as like what it's doing with the for loops and dictionaries or lists and things of that nature. But if you put a blank piece of paper in front of me and said, okay, I need you to write a Python script that does X, Y, and Z, I'm like, you might as well be talking astrophysics because I have no, like, I don't know what's going on here. No, Python is very, very popular now. It's like you said, it's easy to pick up. It's very flexible in that manner, things of that nature. And it's just seemed to gain a whole lot of steam in the last couple of years. And, you know, it's even creeping into Kyle and I space in the network space of trying to automate some of the boring things, right? The everyday mundane, you know, tasks and whatnot. And I kind of want to get your take on this. Like how, like it always says like, oh, automation and scripts and things of that nature, it eliminates the human error element. Like, yes. What do you think of that? Like as far as, so it does. Okay.
It does up to the point of, the developer knows what they're doing. So, you know, if somebody codes it wrong, they're going to be wrong every time. Whereas a person might make a mistake here or there. You try to catch all those things. Testing's really important.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree with that as far as the testing and, you know, QA and, you know, UAT and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It kind of gets, you know, it goes through, you know, four or five cycles before it actually gets to production. And, you know, hopefully you're catching most of it before it actually gets to production, right? That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious on that aspect of it. John, do you do, like, I know stuff like GitHub and code repository places are super, super popular nowadays. Are you on that bandwagon of, you know, keeping all your code in one spot and it's peer reviewed and all that kind of crazy stuff?
Sometimes the crazy thing is a lot of my code is like from multi-generational kind of. So it's got like, I have some stuff in Bitbucket. I have some stuff over in GitHub. I have some stuff in GitLab. I need to consolidate, but I haven't gotten to that point. Yeah, you know, even stuff that it isn't like code, like I have some documents, like a little IT director in a box toolkit that I've been compiling. I put all the documents in there as like markdown files, so you know when you look at them, you can kind of just see everything that's already out there. It's pretty nice way to do things.
Nice. So as far as your interest in the software, is that like, is it the structure of what software engineering brings that attracted you to it? Or is there another piece to be like, okay, look, if I just write this code, you know, I move the robot's arm or, you know, whatever. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Is there like one piece that sticks out? Like, yeah, I like this aspect of it that kind of drew you towards making it a career.
I think for me, it started as just a challenge, you know, just like a mental exercise of, okay, how can I solve this problem? It gets really addicting after you solve one or two challenges where you're like, okay, now I know how to do this. And, you know, you keep piling on more and more knowledge and, you know, before you know it, like you're doing it full time.
Cool. Look at that. Kyle, I see you shaking your head.
I used to work with John, I don't know, about a year ago or so. And I got to see the process and the things happen. And he'd be like, come check this out. Look at what I made. Look at, you know, what this does. And he gave me a few coding challenges and stuff. I can muddy the water some with writing code, but I'm definitely not a programmer.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, for those starting out, because that's obviously, this is the audience of this podcast, is for those breaking in, right? So either from a college perspective or, you know, mid life career change, either one. Do you have any suggestions as far as like, okay, you don't got to break down Da Vinci's code to learn some software development sort of thing. Yeah. Like, is there like a building block that you would say, like in our world, Kyle and I's world, like if you want to do networking, right, Cisco's the elephant in the room, right? So your CCNA, your CCNP, and you sort of walk up from there. Like, is there something like that in the coding world or the software world that doesn't make software engineering so scary? I guess if that's the right term for it. Like what's your suggestion to say, okay, somebody really likes this. What's that next step into saying, okay, this is how you get your foot in the door, or at least, you know, dip your toe in the pool?
I would say go with something that's easy to pick up. You know, I'll throw Python out there again, just because I'm kind of a fanboy for it at the moment.
Sure.
You know, there's tons of information out there on just beginner's programming, beginner coding, like type things out on like YouTube, Udemy, Pluralsight. All those places are really good to learn. But what I will suggest to the listener is, you know, go out there and just meet people that are in that space. They'll tend to lead you down the right path. I know that's worked in my case. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there now on like Reddit and places like that too, that you could go and engage people and try to learn.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. Get involved in your, you know, in your community, right? You pick a community, whatever that is, whatever avenue that is, and, you know, get out there on whatever platform they're hanging on, right? Twitter, or, you know, GitHub is a big one for you guys in the software space, or, you know, cybersecurity is another one. Like that space is booming. Like they have their own, you know, they go out there and, you know, do their own things on, you know, try Hackme and Hackbox and all that kind of stuff. Those platforms that you can go out there. So yeah, I would say find your niche, find where they're hanging out. And then, you know, it's like a virtual water cooler. Just go hang around the water cooler. You'll find somebody that's ready to, you know, take you under your wing and show you the ropes.
And, you know, the one thing that I did too, just because I was really like kind of gung ho for it, was, you know, you just keep plugging away, try to make one thing that's challenging for you, and then you build another thing that's challenging. And, you know, over time you'll be like, hey, this may actually turn into a product, and then, you know, just run with it.
Yeah. So how did that work for you with your, you said you kind of spun up your own software company. Did that come from, you know, like almost like a project of passion sort of thing? And you kind of turned it into a, hey, we can do this. There's a need for this. There's a market for it. And you kind of lived in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. This was probably back when there wasn't a whole lot of browser compatibility. So like around the 2010s, early 2010s, where, you know, you had Internet Explorer, Chrome, Firefox, all kind of doing their own thing. That there were, you know, different websites would work correctly or incorrectly depending on which browser you used. So,
sure.
I wrote a program that would keep track of which sites would be going and using a certain browser. So like you would just click it and it would fire up the right browser for you for that app, for that, URL. And, that was just out of pure frustration where I was like, man, I can't keep track of all these sites, you know, and what browser is compatible with them and all that stuff. That old, like old ActiveX thing that with Internet Explorer that was going on. Like, No. So I ended up writing that, wrote like an account system for it, billing system. And you know, one thing after the next thing you know, I've got a company. So, it was a good learning experience. And you know, it started to get me into management a little bit.
Interesting. So I want to kind of circle back a little bit. You said sort of the way you came on the radar here to come on the podcast is you and Kyle work together. And I'm assuming that's at the community college there, Kyle. Is that right? So John, what were you doing at the community college?
So that was my first time into a director position. So I was director of administrative systems officially. So what that kind of entailed was keeping track of all the different software applications, helping people with any problems that they may have, doing deployments, implementing systems, create a few like smaller systems for folks that may have needed them. And yeah, eventually that all took over the enterprise server area too that Kyle worked in.
Cool. Now, Kyle, did you report to John? And then John
was my boss's boss. So right. So I mean, I guess, you know.
Ah, so we're getting up the chain here. We got some heavy lifters. I like it.
Yeah.
That's right. John, I better throw some respect on your name. Look out. We're dealing with the good folk right now. That's awesome. So then did community college have its own internal like programs that it was doing, whether that's for, you know, the admins or finance, or was there any like sort of customization done there, like internal?
So they had an old system. I won't name the system, but they bought it back in 1993. And the way they did this was you would buy the system and then any changes you wanted to make, you wrote the code and put it in with their code. 30 years of vendor code with our code makes for an awful setup when you're trying to do patching and all that stuff. I think while I worked there, I didn't have any holidays off. We were always doing an upgrade during the holidays. So, yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah. So a lot of customization there. And then we ended up also writing like this whole like Docker swarm sort of thing where we basically built out like a whole bunch of microservices and all sorts of like cool little web interfaces for different things to talk to each other.
Okay.
Yeah, I will say
that sounds cool.
John showed me
really cool.
John showed me that the world of Docker and it blew my mind being like, you know, server guy. I'm like, well, everything's a VM, right? You just spin up a VM and you put whatever service on there and you spin up another one, you put a service on there. And he's like, look at this. Type in like three commands, pops up a Docker container. And he's like, there it is. And I'm like, what? That took like 32 seconds. And he's like, yeah. And then if you want, we'll just wipe it out and make another one. And like, you know, and I'm like, what? Yeah,
start over.
Absolutely crazy.
Blew his mind.
What kind of voodoo magic is this?
Yes.
I played with Docker a little bit, and I would agree. I think it's way quicker than doing VM or, God forbid, physical hardware. Like, because now in 2022, like, it's taking forever for physical hardware to get to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
So you need something spun up like yesterday. Man, Docker is the way to go, or, you know, cloud or, you know, whatever. But yeah, Docker is pretty cool. It really is a nice container.
And the nice thing there too is when you build that container on your machine and you push it up to the cloud or wherever it is, it's going to run identical between the two. It's, you know, as in development, you know, you always have the it works on my machine thing. Well, you know, as soon as you get it up there, you're like, I'm hoping this is going to work. It's probably not, but you know, now with Docker, you don't really have any of that. It's, you know, you just have some configuration one time and, you know, then you can just say, okay, whenever it goes to Git, it pushes out to Docker, it updates, it's done. So much easier now.
There you go. Yeah, Docker is pretty cool. I got to admit, it's pretty wild for the couple times that I've played with it, you know, in some tests and some lab environments and things of that nature. I would highly recommend Docker and, you know, learning Docker because it does make your life easier.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I had a question. Kyle, yeah. Did you have anything? I had a question, but I forgot it. So I'm going to try to think about it. Did you have something to jump in?
So, John, helping people get started, you know, like you had this idea, this program that you may want to make some sort of grand thing that has a lot of moving parts. What's the best way to take something like that that might seem so daunting and like a million moving billion lines of code or whatever, and break it down into manageable chunks or make it so it's not so overwhelming for somebody trying to start?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So, what I would say is you know, you got to start with the most basic thing first. You know, if you started to get a little bit of development chops under you, you know, and you want to stretch, you know, try like making the bare bones structure of it. Keep that separate from whatever the shiny user interface is. And then focus on that user interface and all the pretty stuff last. Yeah. You really want stuff that at its core works. I would start there and then build onto it. And in my case, I don't make really pretty user interfaces. I'm very kind of utilitarian. But what I ended up doing was I hired somebody just to say, okay, here's a couple possibilities, and then I went out and made it look identical to what he was telling me. You know, it. You got to bounce ideas off of people and see what sticks. And you know, one of the big things too is, you know, once you build something that kind of works, try to get it out there. You know, don't be afraid to let people see it, work with it. From my experience, people have been pretty nice about, hey, you know, why don't you try this? And you know, you just continually kind of build on other people's knowledge, and that eventually becomes stuff that you know. And try to avoid banging your head against the wall for too long.
Okay. Now you'd said about getting some other eyes on it and stuff like that. Is there a good spot for that? I mean, do you just get and then like kind of link it to people, or just, you know, getting people to look at your code?
Yeah. So GitHub's awesome for that. I wish I had that back in the day. you know, what I would do, I actually had a blog and still have a blog, but I would put my code up there for people to use. I wrote a system monitoring tool a long time ago. And you know, this is before like you could put stuff up on GitHub. So I put the code up there and told people, hey, come check it out, use it, you know. And I had a couple people contribute different little plugins for it. So it was pretty cool.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. I remembered my question. So going back to a couple minutes ago. And I know software guys and gals are a little different in the way they sort of come up or get their feet underneath them or cut their teeth, whatever analogy you want to use. So for Kyle and I, and you know, sysadmin, network admin, even some cybersecurity or some other veins of IT, you normally start at like a help desk sort of thing and then sort of branch out from there. Is that like that in the software world, or do you sort of like latch onto a place that needs a junior dev and sort of get that way? Or like, do you get noticed from if you're in a help desk and want to do software development, do you get noticed from that spot, or do you have to take a different route, or is it different, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. Starting off in help desk will work. you know, the junior dev spots are great if you can get one. If you can't, you know, you find find that foot in the door. And you know, you got to apply yourself. You know, you can't just say, well, you know, I'm going to just focus only on doing the bare minimum, you know, you have to be out there thinking, kind of reaching for, okay, what would make kick this up to the next level, you know, and working mm-hmm. with people and trying, you know, engage your coworkers, you know, and then from there, you know, maybe do like, a prototype of something and show like the software dev guys that, or, you know, your manager, it's something that makes life easier. Like if you're working at a help desk and you're imaging machines, make a script that helps you image the machines faster, you know, stuff like that, that just kind of helps establish you as somebody that can write a script, can write a program, and, you know, eventually you'll start moving up the ladder.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. Cause I've always felt like devs take a little bit different path than, you know, some of the other veins of IT. I wasn't sure what the deal was as far as like, what's the path there? Is it help desk and just hope and pray you get noticed, or is it something else to, you know, sort of set you apart from the crowd? And, you know, cause ultimately I think a mentor is a big one too, right? We talk about this on the show all the time, grabbing a mentor and, you know, letting them, you know, having them let you shoulder surf, or, you know, hey, writing code and then having the mentor say, yeah, this is going to work, but you're going to break here because X, or, you know, whatever. So I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get somebody that is a little more long in the tooth, getting a hold of their ear and saying, look, you know, try to yeah. guide me. Right. But no, I think that's some good advice to, you know, like I said, a blog is another good one. We talked about that too, you know. Put a blog out there. You know, websites are relatively cheap nowadays, and then basically just write you're basically writing out your studies, right? What you're learning in a blog form, and, you know, hey, you stick with it a year or whatever it is, and you kind of look back and say, look where I was September of last year to where yeah. I'm at now in June of this year, July of this year. It's a growth thing, right? And I've actually started a blog for my DevNet studies, so it's the site isn't up yet. I have the domain, so I just got to actually build the site and start putting shit yeah. up there. but that's coming as well. So I think that works for me personally. Now, whether people like to write in an actual journal with, you know, hard pen and paper, that's an option too. You don't have to do all this crazy fancy digital stuff, but, you know, you can write it down on the pen and paper. So I think a blog is a big one that shows your growth. And, you know, even if you don't have any experience, right, that can be a proof of experience, right? So say, hey, I'm trying to break in, you know, hey, look, I don't have any experience, but look, I have a blog, I've done this XYZ, you know, that's sort of a track record, if you will, of, you know, if you don't really have anything, right, that's a track record, and that's at least a jumping off point, I think.
One other thing I should mention too is go and get involved with the open source community, because there's tons of projects that need people for all sorts of tasks, but, you know, writing the technical documentation for it, helping like maintain a website for it, making bug fixes, working on enhancements, all that stuff, you know, will really help the community. And, you know, you can tie your name to that project then and say, hey, I actually worked on, you know, this project here. So, you know, that's another avenue you can take.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of open source, are you even a developer if you don't run Linux at your house? Like, is that even a thing?
I don't know.
Is that like a prerequisite? You got to run Ubuntu Linux?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about right now?
Yeah. Oh, we won't start that whole Ubuntu scent conversation. That's a war.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So, yeah, some battle lines have been drawn in that one. Oh. Yeah, look out. Yeah. No, I think that's some great advice. I think it's totally doable in today's world. I guess, John, another question I had is, you know, obviously this IT thing that we're a part of, you know, it moves so fast. It's lightning speed at how fast some of this stuff moves. And it's just insanity. But like, do you have a take on where the software role is going? Like, is there something that's like super hot right now that you think that's going to catch on in the next, you know, 5, 7, whatever
Yeah, I think the one really big one I think that's going to be coming in the next 5-10 years is going to be like the quantum computing, you know. I see that as it's starting right now to pick up, and you know, before you know it, like I think they're going to have a Moore's law sort of thing take effect there too, where it's, you know, they're going to be able to double the transistors over a period of a year, say, and then it just kind of keep continuing. I see that as being the next big thing. From the code standpoint, I think, you know, Python is probably one of your top languages to be learning in the next couple years. You know, things change all the time, but I think that one's going to be having some long legs on it. And, you know, a lot of things are open source and continue to be open source, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on AI as far as where the software people fit in with developing AI and that sort of thing? Like, are we talking like Skynet, like version 2 going on here? What's the deal there? No, because I think they're intertwined. I think AI is going to be hot in the future. I think in some aspects, in some circles, it's hot now. But I think in the future, AI is even going to be further down the road, you know, talking, you know, Tesla and the auto driving cars and all that. That's all software based. You have to have somebody to write all that stuff. So I'm curious to see where your sort of your software engineer brain meets the AI brain, or if there is, if there is a relationship. If not, that's fine.
I think it was a week or two ago that Google engineer released transcripts with his conversation with Google's Lambda AI, where
that's right,
transcript is pretty convincing. Like, you know, that's like the Alan Turing test on steroids. Like, that thing is out there.
Some next level.
But the practical stuff, like, you have AI tools that are going out there reading your code. And you make, like, you know, you type something in and it says, did you want to do this? You know, it's like a freaky version of Clippy from the 90s, you know, or that little animated paperclip. But, you know, it's really kind of getting spooky now. You know, products like Kite and GitHub has their like code completion stuff, and Amazon just pushed one of theirs out. Okay. So, you know, it's going to make our code better. I'm not convinced it's going to take away all programming. I think programming is going to stay for a long time, but you never know. If something like a Google Lambda gets serious about coding, we may have a challenge.
I heard that Amazon was creating like an in-house maid, and it was all AI based, and like it was like a robot. I saw something. This was a few years back, but like, I saw it was a dog. It was a metal robot dog sort of thing. And like Jeff Bezos was like walking beside it, and the dog was walking with him. And I was like, this is outrageous. What is going on here? You know, it's like, and it was all AI driven. And like, and you know, that was the thing too, a couple of years back, where like, you know, now you have the Alexas and the Google Home, you know, Google Homes, things of that nature. All that stuff is in the house. All that stuff is programmed. All those things that you can attached to your Amazons and things of that nature, that's all, I'm assuming it's API relative, right? You're just calling another service's API and you're pulling down whatever, you know, but all that has to be written by software folks. So it's like the opportunity is just wide open to literally do whatever you want in the software world. So if you have a structured mind in that way, I think you can't go wrong with the software stuff, because there's just so much out there. It's just, and it's not stopping. And like we said, it's a software world going forward. The rest of us are just along for the ride. It's just, that's the truth. Just is what it is. You know, it's just insane to me how far it's come in such a tiny, short amount of time, right? I mean, John, you just said, like, you wrote the code for, you know, the browser compatibility back in 2010. And it's just like, wow, that wasn't that long ago. And, you know, here we are talking AI. Like, you went from browser incompatibility to AI in like 10 years. You're like, whoa, slow down, horsey. Pull the reins on that.
Oh, like, yeah. Geez. Blockchain stuff, too, that's rolling out. Like, that's going crazy. You know, I see that as being one of the brave new spaces. You know, right now, I think Bitcoin has some hiccups as far as it's being used for speculation. You know? So, like, I want to see it being used as an actual currency and not as an investment tool.
Yeah. Currency. Yeah. Standalone. So, no, I agree. I think the blockchain is going to be huge. Obviously, crypto is all built on blockchain and, you know, rewriting and, you know, all that kind of, you know, crazy stuff. And shout out to Dean, who is a crypto maniac. Like, that dude knows, he knows his crypto. So I'm sure he'll listen to this. So shout out to my man, Dean, who was Kyle's predecessor on this show. He loved crypto. And that is on the list of topics to discuss on this podcast. So maybe if I can wrangle Dean into a room, we'll talk about a little crypto, you know, whatnot. So who knows? But I think this has all been real good. So then, sort of turning your hat from an engineer perspective to, you know, some sort of upper management, right? Manager, director, VP, whatever fancy title that are out there today, because, you know, everyone's a little different. Every spot's a little different. Yeah, you have different, calling structures and whatnot. But so I guess, do you have to have a special mindset in order to actually, like, lead people? Because, you know, we've all been there. We've all had terrible bosses who just thought, oh, I was a good engineer. Now I can lead people and tell people what to do, and I'll be just fine. Like, that, it doesn't work that way. So, like, I'm curious, like, is there a special mindset that you had to, like, flip a switch and say, okay, look, I got to step back from the day to day, which I've been used to for the last 20 years, right? And now I got to deal with, you know, cohesiveness of a team, different personalities on a team, budgets, numbers, talking tech and getting your point across to people that are above you that are not tech people or software developers. Like, I'm curious on your thoughts on that, because that seems to be a pattern of things going that way today, of, you know, you sort of have to dumb it down for the fun. And that makes sense, right? They're not paid to know what you know. But the communication there has to be, you know, light years ahead of the communication you did as an engineer.
Yeah. It's a big switch. You know, you definitely have to have some soft skills, and you got to develop them. Not just once you become that director, like, you are continually trying to look at people and try to figure them out. And then, you know, see, like, what things interest them, what things don't interest them. And then you basically start to chip away at it. There's a whole bunch of, like, relationships you got to develop with people at or above your level, as well as people that are on the ground. The one thing that I did, I thought was really kind of helpful, was to take a mental note of all the bosses that I've had. And I wrote down all the good things that they did and all the bad things that they did, in my opinion. And I did everything they did well, and everything they did poorly, I tried to do the exact opposite. So,
sure.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That takes you pretty far, I think. It you have to build trust. And that's absolutely paramount.
There is a difference in, like we said, engineering and then getting promoted. And say you worked with a team of five people, and now all of a sudden you're above them. Like, how do you split that? Okay, now, you know, for the first 2 years of my job, we were partners or we were colleagues, and now you have to listen to me. Like, how do you... How do you deal with those waters of asserting authority without coming across as, you know, hey, this guy, you know, all of a sudden he's got a promotion. He thinks his shit don't
stop. So, really, I don't think that you flip the switch and you're like, I'm the boss, you know. For people that do a lot of that thinking, the thought work, you know, like doing software development and things like that, they are trying to solve the same problems that you're trying to solve, you know. So it's much more of collaborating with people and not just saying you're going to do it this way. And you know, right. it at the end of the day, that's going to build the best solution. It's not the one person like going down and complaining to everybody that works under them.
Yeah, you always, mental note, you complain up, you never complain. That's right. Down. That's the way it works in the world.
Pretty much. You can get a lot of complaints.
You bitch up, you never bitch down. Right. That's right. You got broad shoulders, you just pump them up the ladder. Right. No, but I think there's a trust thing there too, right? You know, now that you were with a group of folks and now you've been promoted to this, you know, either a team lead or manager, whatever title that you want to throw yourself in. I think the trust needs to be there as well. So you can show them, hey, you know, just because I have this different title doesn't mean I'm any different. Now I just, you know, sign off on your timesheets. I think trust goes both ways, right? You have to trust the people below you, and then you have to trust, you know, or work on the trust to the people above you, I think. And I think that makes for a cohesive team or a cohesive, up-down structure, if you will, hierarchy, whatever word you want to use. But at the end of the day, you know, you're there to solve problems and, you know, make the software a little bit better than it was yesterday. And however you can do that is the way you got to do that. And I think that's a good one, you know, going forward. And then it kind of leads me into my next question in that same space. Like, what are you looking, or what I should say, what are today's, you know, directors or managers looking for in the software engineer person? Is it more like tech things, or is it more of like soft skills and the tech stuff will come? Like, what's the thought there?
So, you know, ideally, they would have a mindset of being able to solve problems. You know, so for me, when I'm like interviewing somebody, I'm doing like little logic challenges with them, you know, trying to see like how you think. But then at the same time, I'm looking at them from the perspective of how do they communicate? You know, are they speaking well? Or is there some other thing that, you know, like if you're sitting there and you're acting like a robot, your voice is very monotone, you know, like nobody's going to want to talk to you in general. Right. But what will end up happening is, you know, at the end of the day, that person's going to have to go out and talk to people and try to figure out, okay, what is it that our customer actually needs? And that's how you basically progress, you know? And that's what I'm kind of looking for, at least in my case with, you know, smaller shops, somebody that can do the going out, talking to people and actually being able to sit down and write some code.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think this was a little true in our case. Like, there's always been this weird like perception of, you know, especially in the software dev space, that they're a little introverted. So they, you know, they sit in a basement and code and, you know, all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff. I think that mindset is changing a little bit now in the world of, you know, especially software devs and you know, people alike. I think it's a little more outgoing now. You're more part of a team oriented. You're not sitting like in a basement and, you know, churning on code for 12 hours or whatever it is. So, you know, I think the team initiative has to be there as well. I think working well with others and sort of, you know, the collaboration, especially in the COVID era, the last, you know, 2.5 years, seems like 20 years, whatever. Mm. You have to learn to collaborate when you're not sitting next to somebody or over a Teams meeting or, you know, in a GitHub, right? You know, in a central repository of whatever flavor of choosing. So I'm just curious on your take on that as far as, okay, look, we were looked at as far as like basement dwellers doing nerdy stuff, now into like AI and making Teslas drive your car.
Yeah. I would say I was probably one of those people that was like down in my basement writing code for, you know, 10 hours a day. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I got started. I really enjoyed that. The thing I will say is I'm naturally introverted, you know. I have just learned to flip the switch, you know, so I can talk with people, I can have a good time with people. At the end of the day, you know, hey, if I can get an hour to sit down and write some code, hey, I'm going to do that. Sure. Because that's interesting to me. And, you know, the converse is also okay too. You know, if you're extroverted, yeah, you can be an excellent coder as well. I think probably maybe methodologies might be a little different, because like the introverts tend to think a little bit and they're a little bit more in their own headspace, whereas an extrovert would, you know, tend to like want to communicate out everything all at one time and try to figure out, okay, you know, I'm pulling this person in, this person in, just to talk it through. Whereas the introvert might start off like just all in their head and trying to get it just right to share with others.
No, that's a good point. I think that's, like I said, that stereotype is sort of changing. I think it's changing, you know, for the better in that aspect of, you know, yeah, more team central and not, you know, everybody, you know, one person knows everything. So, you know, that person gets hit by a bus and, you know, your whole company goes down the drain. So no, I think that's an analogy.
That could be the same anywhere. True. You know, on the networking side, true, on the software side. Yeah. Oh man. Heck, even if a telephone pole gets hit the wrong way, everything goes down.
been there for sure. Yeah. Kyle, you got anything?
So let's say like working with the team or managing a team, do you just kind of give everybody a little like part to work on and then bring it together? Or do you kind of have it in mind that like, this is the ultimate goal? So kind of, you know, architect the program in such a way that you know that it's going to connect to something else? Or do you just kind of like make the little units and then just make some changes so that they actually integrate properly?
So it depends. So, yeah, classic consulting answer, but, yeah, so I would say like for certain projects, right, where the stakes aren't very high, you know, I would be okay with having like one person just sit down and work on it. If this was a mission critical piece for wherever I'm working or for the project I'm working on, that requires two people at least to be sitting down. So like classic pair programming, one person's typing, the other person's running shotgun, and they're basically like saying, okay, let's do this, 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 and this. And they're collaborating the entire time. And it seems to work pretty well, but that requires at least two developers. So you got to keep that in mind too.
Now, does that similar kind of thing, does that work like in an asynchronous fashion too? Or does it, yeah, I mean, is it has to be kind of real time?
I prefer sort of that real time communication, just because it's kind of that stream of consciousness sort of approach to it. But, you know, if you can't have two people working on the same project at the same time, then what, you know, I would do is at least do a, what they call a peer review, where basically at some point you sit down with another person and walk through the code and just make sure like that person sees whether or not, you know, they think that you did it correctly or not. They may have some suggestions on making it a little bit better. And going that way, you know, cause you know, whenever you look at your own code, sometimes you're not going to see the bug.
Nice. Okay. So I remember, what was the term that we used? Was it rubber duck or rubber chicken or something like that?
Rubber duck. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you explain that out?
Yeah. Kyle, I pulled you in on these a couple times, but, basically you just sit down and, you know, you're stuck on a problem, right? So nothing's working. So worst case scenario, you have a literal rubber duck, on your desk and you talk to that rubber duck about the problem and you're like walking through code and everything. Better case scenario, you pull somebody else in. They don't even have to know anything about code. You know, and you kind of show them what the problem is and kind of walk through it with them. And just that act of talking it out sometimes can jar the brain loose enough to come up with the solution. But it requires actually talking it out. You can't just like keep it in your head. Not to encourage drinking, but there's also a thing called the Balmer Peak, where you drink just enough beer to alter your brain just enough to solve those really tough problems.
You had me at, I don't advocate drinking. You had me right there. Say no more, my friend. Don't tempt me with a good time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, right around that hour mark. So, John, this has been awesome. I really appreciate your insight. This has been great. Welcome back anytime. This is a great conversation. We loved having you. Do you have any socials you want to plug, like Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever?
Sure. Yeah. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Jay Glasgow on there. That's my big one. I love LinkedIn.
Yep. It's a good one too. Yeah. So if anybody wants to connect with John, do a little more talking or whatever, his LinkedIn profile will be posted in the show notes. We'll give you that nice, easy access. So, again, this has been awesome. This has been great. Say welcome back anytime.
Thanks, John.
Software has always intrigued me, but it's never been my, you know, sort of forte. So this has been really good. So appreciate you taking a couple of minutes and coming on and talking.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. So,
yeah, everybody, we're going to get out of here again. Thanks for joining us this week on the new and improved Breaking Down the Bytes podcast. So make sure you visit our website, breakingbytespod.io. So you can subscribe to the show right from there on any of your chosen platforms. There's links to all of them, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just a plain RSS feed is there as well if you just need that. Throw us a rating on iTunes. That would be cool too. Not sure if they still do the ratings thing, or at least that if it fools with the algorithm or not, but the ratings always look cool. So always throw us a rating if you like it. Always looking for feedback. You can email us anytime. All of our links and stuff will be in the show notes if you want to drop us a line. Twitter at Breaking Bytes Pod. I'm at Layer 8 Packet. Kyle's at Danith256. Hit us up. Our DMs are open. We're here to help in any fashion that we can. And then also, you know, if you like the show, simply tell a friend, right? The word of mouth works just as good in today's, you know, crazy tech-driven world that we live in. I think sometimes it even works a little better. So it's all good there. So tell a friend about us. That'd be awesome. And then also we actually spun up a LinkedIn page. So it's linkedin.com/breakingbytespod. We have some stuff up there. So you'll get notifications of some shows and, you know, when a new show drops and some articles that we come across if we think worth sharing out there. That's on there as well. So come say hi on LinkedIn for us. Facebook.com/breakingdownthebytes. We have a Discord server as well to come and hang. The invite is in the show notes. And then there's also our survey out there as well. Just a short things like 10 questions up there. It's all anonymous. We don't know who you are. We don't get any names or collect any data. It just shows us who's answering what questions and just gets us to tweak the show a little better to people's likings. And because when you talk into a mic like this, it can kind of, yeah, you don't really know how you're doing unless people give you feedback. So feedback's always good. So help us help you. No, just kidding. all right, that's it. Kyle, it's been awesome, man. Always a pleasure. John, it's been
pleasure.
Great.
Yep.
Always cool. So thanks, John, for coming. And you're welcome back anytime. And we will see everybody next week. See you guys.
See you.